Tonight, the topic is transformative healing. Last week, we talked about the chakras, and this seems like a natural follow-up. And I think I'll begin with two very simple truths. The first simple truth is that we all can heal our lives. We can all completely heal our lives. We can transform our lives, whatever, all the places where we feel stuck right now or the long-standing struggles we've had, we can heal it all. That the power of healing is that great. It isn't easy. It's not like a quick fix or anything like that. But we do have the power to transform who we are through healing. That is simple truth number one. Simple truth number two is that any way that I am intolerable to myself, or any way that I find parts of the world intolerable, you know, those people doing things like that, that's horrible that they're doing that, you know, all that, that's all indications that I need healing. Also, any ways that I feel stuck, flat, bored with my life, uninspired, those are ways that I need healing. I think we would have a very different world if those two simple truths were just widely acknowledged, you know. It's sad to me that so many people in this world walk around in whatever misery they're in thinking, this is what life is, this is the way it has to be. You know, it's very sad. From the point of the view of the wisdom traditions, we're surrounded by healing energy. The universe, as it were, wants to heal us, wants to support our healing. And you know, I'm the primary block or resistance to the action of healing happening in my life, you know, that kind of thing. There's that great quote by Rumi, you know, don't go searching for love. Your job is to just remove all the blocks you have toward love inside of you, you know. And so there's so much to say about healing. I would say that the head doesn't really understand much about healing. I mean, once in a while we get an insight, and then that insight really shifts something emotionally, and then that can be healing. But that's more, it's almost more by the, you know, the work that we do at other levels opens us up so that the head is ready to have that insight, you know. The head likes to think that it's in charge, and it is. It is seldom in charge, and it certainly is not in charge of anything having to do with healing. And even the heart, when we feel pain in the heart sometimes does hold pain, but often the heart holds pain because there's holdings at deeper levels. The heart is, as it were, the first presentation of a much deeper pain. The deepest pains are held in the lower chakras, the really, what you might say, the high voltage energies. It gets more and more powerful the further and further down you go into the body. And so healing is possible, but it isn't easy, and it isn't a quick journey. You know, it's funny, the word healing sounds so lovely. I think some of the most intense experiences of pain I've gone through in my life have been part of the healing process, you know. And healing follows its own rhythm. It's so important to be indulgently patient with oneself in the healing process, you know. because, you know, head thinks, okay, well, I got it now. I'm close to the end. You know, head likes to play all those games. And healing just takes as long as it takes. And shifts take as long as they take. And integration takes as long as it takes, you know. And it's so important just to be patient with ourselves as we're, you know, in our imperfectness, you know. I mean, part and parcel of healing is just learning to accept ourselves in our imperfectness, you know. Again, it's a deep truth of all the wisdom traditions that each one of us, beneath whatever, you know, flaws and neuroses and struggles and whatever else we have, each one of us at our core has a precious, is a precious self and is infinitely lovable, you know. And to some extent, the goal of Buddhism or any of the wisdom traditions is to, as it were, uncover that golden, precious essence that is at the core of who I am, at the core of who each of us is, you know. And so healing is about, you know, trusting in that, even if we can't see that golden core from where we're sitting, you know, trusting that it's there. Trusting in our own preciousness, and allowing ourselves to be imperfect and just where we are. One distinction that I really like, and this is a distinction that a gentleman that I've recently discovered, and he's had his work has meant a great deal to me. Resma Menakin, who speaks a lot about issues of race, he talks about clean pain versus dirty pain. And dirty pain, we all know what that is. Dirty pain is the suffering I have when I don't deal with something directly, when I try to bypass it, when I try to ignore it, when I try to bury it, you know, when I try to do some sort of strategy so I don't have to face it, you know. That's dirty pain. Clean pain is the pain that I face directly, that I face authentically, you know. And it's funny that, you know, our warm, fuzzy mammalian brain thinks the choice is between pain and no pain. Can I choose no pain? And often the choice is really between clean pain and dirty pain. And if I choose clean pain, it might be intense, but it's over relatively quickly. I move through it relatively quickly. If it's dirty pain, it can drag on for years. You know, and a lot of the suffering that people have, you know, over years, over decades, is because of dirty pain that they haven't wanted to face. I always like to say around this idea of facing pain, what it really means is holding a container for pain, holding a container of love and mindfulness. And it can be a tricky thing, especially for people who have been overwhelmed by feeling at earlier points in their life. You know, it might be natural for someone to say, well, I've already faced pain. You know, I was experiencing it for years. But it's one thing to be, as it were, in the river, like being dragged along in the current of the river and knocked around and drowning in the river, as opposed to standing on the banks of the river, observing the river flow. Holding the container is like the person standing on the banks of the river, holding the flow, watching the flow, being aware of it, being one with it, but not drowning in it. Part of the purpose of meditation, or really any of the spiritual practices, you might say, is to build our container so that we're able to hold more and more. And of course, the way we build our container is by simply leaning into discomfort. We don't have to go to overwhelm, but just leaning, you know, can I feel a little more of that? Can I feel a little more of that anger? Can I feel a little more of that grief? Can I feel a little more of that shame? And every day, just holding a little bit more, and over time, our container does grow. One of the ways that we can be aware that we're in need of healing is when we feel attacked from within. And I think this is a very common experience, you know, voices of recrimination, voices of shame, anger, you know, you're not worthy, you're not good enough, you know, all the voices, the chorus of negative voices within. It's a subtle thing. Jung talked about how the psyche has this incredible drive toward integration and wholeness. Everything in us is driving toward wholeness. And everything in us, you might almost say everything within us is made of love. Love is at its core. And it's trying to get to love. Like even the most disconnected, unintegrated part of myself is trying to get to the circle of love that is who I am at the core of my being. And so, now combine that with a very funny human thing. The very funny human thing is that we're kind of drawn to the things that are forbidden, you know? And think of children, like, I don't know, you know, some of you may have children, I don't know, but if you have a room, you know, say you have a house, and a child might be happy in every room in the house, but then you tell the child, you know, mommy or daddy is going to be in that room and you can't go in there, then that's the only room that the kid wants to be in at that point, you know. The rest of the house loses interest. You know, and it's just something so human. Like, suppose I said something like, you know, you can ask me whatever you want, but don't ask me about my feet. Then immediately the question would pop up, like, what's going on with Mike's feet, you know? It's just, like, there's something very human about that. Incidentally, there's nothing going on with my feet. But the point is, essentially the psyche says to all these broken places, you can't come into ego. You can't come into the ego realm. You can't come into consciousness. And so by saying that, that's exactly where those places want to go. You know, it's precisely by resisting them that we feed them energy. And when one of these voices is calling up, you know, it has some verbal message, it's calling up, you know, you are horrible or you are unworthy or not good enough or whatever. It's very important to relate to that the way a parent would relate to, say, a two-year-old having a temper tantrum. A two-year-old having a temper tantrum will say the wildest things. You know, I hate mommy, I hate daddy, I want to eat ice cream forever. You know, whatever the two-year-old says. The wise parent realizes the verbal content of what the child is saying is simply to be just, you know, ignored. Like, that doesn't matter. The wise parent attends to the child's real needs and more or less ignores what they say verbally. And much in the same way, any part of us that is sending out those difficult messages is, as it were, in temper tantrum. It's a young part of us in temper tantrum. And like a child in temper tantrum, it's trying to get attention of some kind. And it's very important to be wise enough to realize that the verbal content of those messages is meaningless. What's meaningful is the pain that's underneath them. You might say that place in us is sending these verbal messages because it's trying to get ego to feel the same thing that it's feeling. You know, and so if ego is feeling the same thing that it's feeling, then there'd be a kind of moment of communion between this exiled place and ego, you know. The way we create integration is to recognize what that feeling is and follow it back. Where is that voice coming from? Where is the holding from which that voice is coming from, and feeling everything there? And then when we feel it, again, once we allow it fully, then we can release it. A lot of the logic of healing is allowing, a deep allowing, allowing the body to be as it is, allowing the emotional body to be as it is. Another way that healing might be evident is when we feel stuck, numb, bored, uninspired, flat, dull, you know, all these sorts of things. And what's happening here is it's so subtle because the mind, the mammalian brain, is so agile about wanting to avoid pain. It's so, like, it's so reflexive about wanting to avoid anything uncomfortable, you know. And so some place that is hurt, some place that experienced trauma, will get stuck and there'll be a kind of holding, a kind of block. And the body, you know, the mind will bury that pain, bury that block even. So I don't even realize that I'm holding. And then all I realize is that on the surface where I'm experiencing things, there's no flow. Everything is flat and dull and boring, and I'm wondering why I'm in a rut. I'm in a rut because there's a place of holding. And there's a place of holding because there's been trauma. Trauma is a part of the body that is not in flow. It's not in the healthy flow of love, the healthy flow of connection. It is a place in us that has locked up. And of course, feeling these places is scary. In fact, there may be a tremendous amount of fear leading up to feeling one of these places, because it feels like the most terrifying thing imaginable. This place that was in trauma has been, you know, might have been locked up most of our life, you know, from early infancy until now, you know. And so it's terrifying at the thought that things might open up and flow again. But once we connect and feel what's there, we open the flow. And the more we open these inner flows, the more our life on the outside just becomes rich and rewarding. Buddhism gives us enormous tools for doing the work of healing. I mean, part of the healing work is simply paying attention. Paying attention to what we're feeling, paying attention to our reactions. You know, I go out in the world, I have an action with somebody and it doesn't feel right. And then rather than just blow that off, feel into, why doesn't that feel right? What was going on there? How was I triggered? What, you know, asking all those questions, dropping in an inquiry to all these sorts of things. Part of what Buddhism teaches us also is quieting ourselves down. It's often only by quieting ourselves down that we hear the voices that we're too afraid to speak. You know, it has to get so quiet before some of our internal shutdown voices feel they have the space to speak. The work of healing is so important in the spiritual path because anything that I can't tolerate within myself, I can't tolerate out there in the world. And so the more I can face the intolerable places within myself, the more I can heal and accept and say yes to everything I am, the more I can say yes to everything out there and everything that other people present to me. I really think of the Buddhist idea of enlightenment as a kind of grand, open-hearted yes to everything that is, you know. And a lot of that work involves just saying yes to everything that we are. And I'll say also in this time, this work of healing is political work. It absolutely is political work. Among other things, as a white man, I would say that this healing work is part of anti-racist work. You know, and this is something that, again, Resmaa Menakin talks about quite a bit, You know, I have to look at all the ways that everything around race makes me feel uncomfortable, and everything about otherness, you know, and breathe into that and track that and, you know, this sort of thing. When we do the work of healing, we're giving a gift to ourselves, but we're also giving a gift to everyone in our lives around us. Because the more I heal myself, the more I walk into every situation in my life that much more full of love, that much more fully connected to life. And people feel that. You know, I often say the most powerful message that we send in our lives, it's not what we say with our mouths. It's the energetic signature we carry. And if I'm healing, I'm raising the vibration of my energetic signature every day. So with that, I'm going to share the quote sheet. I just put the quote sheet in the chat. The first quote is a famous quote by the playwright Aeschylus. "He who learns must suffer, and even in our sleep, pain that cannot forget falls drop by drop upon the heart. And in our own despair, against our will, comes wisdom to us by the awful grace of God." That's a famous quote in American history, actually. On the day of April 4th, 1968, Robert Kennedy was campaigning for president, and he was about to fly to Indianapolis. When he got on the plane, he got the news that Martin Luther King Jr. had been shot, and they weren't sure whether he was going to live or not. He flew to Indianapolis. When he landed, they got the news that Martin Luther King Jr. had died. And Robert Kennedy was scheduled to go to a primarily black neighborhood that night, and all his aides were begging him not to go, not to go. He decided to go. He was actually the one who informed the crowd that MLK had been killed. And then he spoke very vulnerably. It was the only public talk in which he ever talked about the grief of losing his own brother, JFK. And he shared this quote from Aeschylus. He quoted it from memory. And for whatever reason, he made such a heartfelt connection with the crowd that there was no rioting in Indianapolis. Indianapolis was the only major city that night that did not experience riots. Julius Caesar said, "It is easier to find men who will volunteer to die than to find those who are willing to endure pain with patience." Ralph Waldo Emerson said, "He who is not every day conquering some fear has not learned the secret of life." Henry David Thoreau said, "If we will be quiet, we shall find some compensation in every disappointment." Marie Curie says, "Nothing in life is to be feared. It is only to be understood. Now is the time to understand more, that we may fear less." That quote is true at many levels. Robert Service says, "Be master of your petty annoyances and conserve your energy for the big worthwhile things. It isn't the mountain ahead that wears you out. It's the grain of sand in your shoe." There's something so true about that. Khalil Gibran said, "Out of suffering have emerged the strongest souls. The most massive characters are seared with scars." Eleanor Roosevelt said, "You gain strength, courage, and confidence by every experience in which you really stop to look fear in the face. If you're able to say to yourself, 'I have lived through this horror, I can take the next thing that comes along.' You must do the thing that you think you cannot do." Luis Ferdinand Celine says, when you stay too long in the same place, people and things go to pot on you. They rot and start stinking for your special benefit. Jim Rohn says, we must all suffer from one of two pains, the pain of discipline or the pain of regret. The difference is discipline weighs ounces, while regret weighs tons. Sorry, hold on a sec. Bernie Siegel says, embrace each challenge in your life as an opportunity for self-transformation. The Dalai Lama says, there's a saying in Tibetan, tragedy should be utilized as a source of strength. No matter what sort of difficulties, no matter how painful experience is, if we lose our hope, that's the real disaster. Bob Dylan says quite simply, behind every beautiful thing, there's some kind of pain. Bob Marley says, you never know how strong you are until being strong is your only choice. Caitlyn Jenner, who used to be known as Bruce Jenner, says, you will face obstacles. Don't let them scare you. Fear is part of the game. Trying things outside of your comfort zone is essential because your ability to grow as a person is directly related to the amount of insecurity you can handle. So be strong and fearless on this journey we call life. Ivlana Vazant said, when you have something to do, life will not allow you to move forward until you do it. Marion Williamson said, personal transformation can and does have global effects. As we go, so the world goes, for the world is in us. The revolution that will save us is ultimately a personal one. Oprah Winfrey says, turn your wounds into strength. Michael Hyatt said, don't feel failure. Fear being in exactly the same place next year as you are today. Tony Roberts says, change happens when the pain of staying the same is greater than the pain of changing. A couple from Neil Strauss. Neil Strauss said, great things never come from comfort zones. He also said, people go through so much pain trying to avoid pain. Elizabeth Gilbert said, I've never seen any life transformation that didn't begin with a person in question finally getting tired of their own nonsense. I love that. Michael Barbarullo says, God has given you the power and desire to change, but you still need to be willing to do the work. Doing the work means facing your fears and getting out of your comfort zone. Charlotte Erickson says, fear is the thing that makes the heart grow. Neville Ravikant says, most of the gains in life come from suffering in the short term, so you can get paid in the long term. John Mark Green said, change can be hard. It requires no extra effort to settle for the same old thing. Autopilot keeps us locked into past patterns. But transforming your life, that requires courage, commitment, and effort. It is tempting to stay camped in the zone of that's just how it is. But to get to the really good stuff in life, you have to be willing to become an explorer and an adventurer. Heather Ash Amara says, change is inevitable, but transformation is by conscious choice. And finally, Resma Menekin says, trauma is about stuckness. Very simple.